Marcus Smart announces that he has tested positive for the coronavirus. And it's Daniel Tice Day. We continue our deep dives on this Friday Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This is like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Friday, and I want to say happy Friday, but it's not a happy Friday at all, because we have a positive COVID-19 test on the Boston Celtics, and it's Marcus Smart, and this comes at a tough day, and we're going to try and keep it light, but no promises on this one, guys. John Corral is here from MassLive.com, joined by RedsArmy.com's Chuck McKinney. I'm glad you're here, Chuck, because...
Why is that?
Because... I feel like our backgrounds going way, way back to the days, for people who don't know, Chuck and I produced morning news at WBZ back in starting in 2001.
Yeah.
It was after 9/11, like the days after 9/11. That's when I started there.
Yep.
So, man, so Chuck and I went to Emerson. We were teammates on the Emerson basketball team. Chuck was a year ahead of me, and then we kind of lost touch, and then we got back together there at WBZ, and we have all of this news background, and I feel like that's kind of appropriate for when we have a COVID-19 coronavirus diagnosis for Marcus Smart, because I feel like the reaction when it's one of your own guys is to run around with your hair on fire. Right? So we've been sitting here Rudy Gobert has it. Man, that's terrible. Donovan Mitchell. Okay, yeah. Two more Lakers tested positive today. Okay. Marcus Smart. Oh my God. 10 stories on coronavirus. What's blah blah blah. Okay. Just because it's happened here doesn't make the story change at all. And I feel like we've had the same complaints about local news when it comes to that stuff. So I feel like you're here to help me treat it appropriately.
Well, let me put down my pitchfork first. Yeah. Stop my plans to overthrow the government, because I have a fire raging on that topic.
Uh-huh. But
we'll touch on that later. But yeah, you know, I saw the news across Twitter, where I get every piece of information in my life just about. And it seemed like the Celtics were coordinated with Marcus, because within a few minutes after we heard it was a particular player that had tested positive, Marcus pushed out a message on his Twitter, which he's, I don't think he has any symptoms. He seemed pretty calm.
Yeah.
He used it as kind of like a teaching moment, which is great to remind everybody the situation we're in, precautions you should take. So that was calming to see him almost immediately, because I mean, we love Marcus. So
right.
Not that we'd want to see anybody on the team get sick, but we were obviously concerned, and I was quickly forwarding the link around to my sons and stuff. But he seems okay. So I guess the only disconcerting part of this story is that the Celtics are still waiting for more test results, correct? And that there could be other players who, or people on the staff who have the virus, right?
It's possible. Yeah. According to the press release, I'll read directly from it. And they, at this point, when the release came out, they didn't name him, because HIPAA rules, they're not going to name who it is anyway.
Right.
It's up to the player. So they said the Celtics player, who is not exhibiting symptoms, has been in isolation for several days and will continue to do so while being monitored by the team and medical staff. The team is awaiting further test results and will communicate them as appropriate, taking steps to maintain the health and safety of everyone in our organization, blah, 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 top priority, so on and so forth. So as far as we know, there are more tests out there, and with Smart out there having it, it's possible somebody else has it. And, I don't know where he got it, when he got it. But You know, it was a little more than a week ago that I was sitting directly in front of Marcus Smart at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in a post-game press conference, appropriately 5 to 6 feet away, and hopefully that was enough. I didn't touch him, but now I'm sitting there like, okay, social isolation, especially right. important, you know? And it's, you know, I think I'm fine. I haven't, nothing's changed in my situation. I feel comfortable and confident that I'm fine. But at the same time, keeping my distance from people, I did go to the supermarket, but you know, anything I touched, I didn't touch things and put it back. Anything I touched, I put in my cart and I bought. Like I'm trying to take precautions, and be careful when you do have to go out, keep your distance and all of that stuff. So,
well, it's, so you made it back. You 2 days ago, you were spring break in Florida. I saw you on TV.
Yeah. I was in, I was with those kids. Dude, I just want to party. I'm not going to let this, you know, don't tread on me, Chuck, and coronavirus. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to party. I'm going to drink. I'm going to lick doorknobs. You know, who cares? Screw it.
So it's interesting. So we're still learning, you know, players are testing positive now, and we're about a week removed since Utah, the Gobert?
It was last Wednesday, recording this on Thursday night.
So okay, so it's been a week, yeah. And we learned a couple of Lakers, and there are members of the Sixers who have tested positive. So it's not, you know, there isn't any – I guess it's ongoing. I don't know. For me, every time I hear situations like this, or we learn about more players, it just makes me think, oh, man, we're not going to have basketball. I know that might not be a rational deduction because – they're just like everybody else in the population. There's going to be a percentage of players who are going to get it. And then hopefully, there's a peak within the NBA, and then we get past that and we can talk about basketball. But man, it just really makes me think, oh shit, this isn't going to happen. You know, and it's not logical, but I don't know.
Well, here, and this is why, and this is important. And I'm sorry for people tuning into a basketball podcast, but this is the world right now. Like, this is literally everybody on everybody's mind. This is why it's so important to be careful. So, yes, you can go to the market and get your stuff. Don't sneeze on things. Don't cough on things. Don't, like, pick through things. If you touch something, pick it up, buy it. It's yours now. You got to go to a pharmacy to pick up things. I get that. If you're sick, obviously stay home. But the social distancing is for a reason, that this thing is communicable between people. And if you're out, the reason why everything's shutting down is so people like Marcus Smart aren't out there non-symptomatic, asymptomatic, doing things thinking that they're fine. But like, you know, you do that little little cough, little droplet falls on a table. Someone else, a busboy comes by and wipes it down, but it gets on his hand, and then he rubs his eye. Now he has it. And you don't think you have it, but maybe you do, and you're asymptomatic. That's why everything is shutting down. And that's why those goddamn assholes in Florida who are thinking like, oh, man, spring break. Like, that's why they are rightfully vilified for being selfish, because the only way to stop this is to not spread it, to let the people who have it work through it, and to not give it to anybody else. That's how this thing stops. That's why we're heading towards this big shutdown of everything, because people are too stupid to not do this. They don't care, too selfish to not do this. Just stop for 2 weeks. The people who have it are going to deal with it, and hopefully they recover. The people who are positive are going to shelter in place, and that thing's going to eventually die, and they may never know that they have it. Great. Good for you.
You know, it just shows how the NBA was, you know, shutting operations down when they did was obviously the right move, because you just think if there was even five more days of contaminated players leaning up against each other, breathing on each other, sweating on each other, and how much more widespread it would be. right? I mean, I know players are starting to get tested more frequently, and they're still getting tested more frequently than the rest of us. But, you know, had they just continued for another week, man, it would have been much, much, much worse.
Disaster. And you know what? And this is why I'm mad. This is why I'm very mad here at the response, the federal response, the government response, because if we knew early on, if we knew how bad it was in the U.S., like for some reason we had this, and it's admittedly like U.S. exceptionalism. Like we're like, yeah, we're fine. You know, we're not China. Like Italy is fine, but like Italy is Italy. Like they're, you know, it's different over there. We're the U.S. and you don't think it's going to happen here. But as soon as they realized that it was actually happening here, like we should have known like instantly, because from just a pure basketball perspective, but on a bigger perspective, we would have quelled a lot of this outbreak. We would have slowed it down much sooner. And from the basketball perspective, we could have shut the season down 2 weeks before it did. And what we'd be talking about right now is a target date for resuming in 2 or 3 weeks. And this is why I think people should be mad at everything that's been happening. From a personal health standpoint, the outbreak has gotten way out of control. From a sports standpoint, your sports have been taken away for much, much longer than they should have. March Madness was canceled. It probably didn't have to be canceled. It could have been April Madness if we had done this the right way. The regular season could be starting up again in 2 or 3 weeks, and now we don't even know if it's going to start up again. Like, so that's why I'm mad. And today, on Thursday, has just been a sequence of event after event after event, and the Marcus Smart thing is just the tipping point of, like, you know what? A lot of our lives have been disrupted to a point that didn't have to be. Like, we should have been disrupted to a smaller degree, but now our lives are going to be disrupted for who knows how long. And that's where I'm really upset.
Yeah, no, I understand your point. I think there would have been a harder sell on the citizens had the senators come out of that, you know, closed door intelligence meeting in late January and told us that this was coming and that we should buckle up for a wild ride. I mean, instead of keeping it to themselves, sharing the information with big donors and selling stock before the market crashed. So as much as I want to rip them apart and storm Capitol Hill for that, you know, criminal behavior is what it is. I do look at, you know, a lot of folk. There was a lot of initial backlash amongst, you know, Americans that were overreacting. So had they come out earlier, you know, that probably would have been worse. But I think you're right. If we had just buckled down a bit sooner, the sooner we're in, the sooner we're out. And then we stick to a more reasonable schedule. Whereas now, you know, we don't know what we're going to have. It looks like the highlight of my basketball season might be some Big Three tournament.
Right. You're going to watch Fat Zach Randolph play basketball and do a podcast on that.
Oh, man, I'm losing my mind, John. Yes. I'm losing my mind.
This is week one, Chuck. We're just through 1 week. We've got Jason Tatum on TikTok doing a crappy dance.
Yes. I saw that. I felt actually hip, and I downloaded TikTok because if I said if Tatum can do it, then I can do it.
Right.
So
anyway, we're 2 weeks away from doing our own dances on TikTok, so I can't judge. I'm going to be doing something. I'm going to do like some old thing. Like I'm going to end up in the hospital catching COVID-19 because I shattered a hip trying to do a TikTok dance. That's what's going to end up happening to me. I'm going to be fine. No flu symptoms, but I'm going to break a hip trying to do something that these kids are doing nowadays. I shake my fist and yell at a cloud. We'll see what happens. All right. I feel like I've gotten enough of this out of my system. I'm glad Marcus Smart is okay. And I'm happy that Marcus Smart is sending a message to people. And in a way, if we're looking for a silver lining, these NBA players coming out and saying, hey, I've got this. I'm going to be fine, but I'm staying home. You might not realize that you have it. I'm staying home. You should too. Like, maybe enough of these, you know, young, dumb, stupid 22-year-olds who are on spring break might get the message. And hey, I say this thinking, like, I'm glad I'm not 21 right now, because I might have been one of those dumb 21-year-olds if I had money invested in, like, hey man, I spent my money to go to Miami for spring break. I'm going. Like, when you're 21, you don't know any better, but they're still idiots.
Yeah. And I mean, I give credence to that, to the message resonating with younger people.
Mm-hmm.
I know it resonates with my kids when, you know, we talk about Kevin Durant has coronavirus, Mark, you know, I get responses from my kids when I text them. So I know that it gets their attention. And then even with us, when we see somebody like Tom Hanks, we're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Celebrities aren't immune to this. You know, this is real. So we all have our kind of like touch points there. But there are some folks who are just off the deep end. Those, you know, those kids have had too much natty light. There's nothing penetrating those brains.
That's true. That's true. All right. Let's get to some basketball. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the deep dives. It's the fifth day of deep dives, which means we're going to talk about the fifth starter, Daniel Theis, when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Tim Bontemps of ESPN said not too long ago that Daniel Theis is actually the Boston Celtics MVP. And I kind of get what he's saying. This season began with serious, serious questions about the center spot. And I think right now, most fans would look at this team and say, you know what, Daniel Theis has done well. And I think that Daniel Theis becomes, like, he replaces Al Horford in the, if this guy gets hurt, we're screwed category.
Like, that's amazing, and that's accurate.
Isn't it? Like, if, let's assume the regular season resumes at some point shortly or shortly enough. If they have to go in there without Daniel Theis at center, like, oh God, we're screwed. Like, there's no, who's going to set those seals for Jason Tatum? Who's going to set, like, all of these things that he does? It's amazing the impact that he's had. And, you know, Chuck, coming into the season, if I were to tell you, play your recording of me saying that and said, no, this is from the future, what would your reaction have been?
Yeah, no, I would have been, you know, I would have checked your temperature, and I would have said you have some sort of weird virus that originated in Asia. No, that's nuts. And what I'm trying to do while you were talking, I'm like, I need to look up the Reds Army season preview to see, you know, what I said about Theis, because I think we were all terrified of him being the starting center.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had a lot of, you know, we were distraught over Horford's departure, but you're absolutely right. This was a huge concern, and to kind of fast forward to where we are now, to just watch how he's had such a spectacular season for, you know, for his standards, it's all relative. You know, I don't go into games. I'm not, you know, I know they're still a little thin at center. But I have, you know, it's been, I don't know, what, 5 months, and I have the utmost confidence in Theis now. Right. I just have faith in him defending the rim, you know, making the right read with help defense, rotation, his three-point shot, his touch around the rim. Like, he's just a fantastic player, and he fits perfectly. And he's created this like seal move that's opened up the floor for other players, that has coaches around the league teaching it to their players. It's remarkable.
Yeah,
it really is.
That seal play is single-handedly changing the entire Celtics offense, and it's springing, most importantly, Jason Tatum. Like, they run that with Jason Tatum all the time. And I highlighted that a couple of places on Mass Live especially, and I'll do it again on Friday when I do the deep dive into Daniel Theis. By the way, as an aside, if you haven't been following along with Mass Live, all of these shows that I've been doing all week, there's a companion piece on Mass Live, a deep dive into Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Kemba, all of those with additional information. So if you've been listening to these shows all week, then go to masslive.com and look for my deep dives on all of these players, because there's additional information there, and these kind of work hand in hand. So I'm going to do another one for Daniel Theis tomorrow, but that play, especially with Tatum, has been great for getting Tatum some easy buckets, that confidence to get, you know, a couple of baskets. But also, part of that play, beyond just opening things up for Tatum, it forced Tatum to be patient, because he, as part of the play, when the defender goes over the top of the pick, he has to kind of put that defender in jail, which, when you watch a player kind of slow down with his dribble and kind of take like almost like a step back, and the defender's on his back, it forces Tatum to be patient and do that to give Theis that extra second to roll and seal. And early on in the season, impatience and moving too fast was part of Tatum's problem. So this play, in the short-term view, opens up dunks for Tatum, but also has made him more patient as a driver, and has taught him how to let plays develop, which might be an even bigger positive for his overall game moving forward in the future.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
So, all right. I'm glad you agree.
No. Sorry. You know, I'm just enamored with some of Theis's stats here. It's just, I had no idea he had a 130 offensive rating. I'd love to see, you know, which lineups are the best for the Celtics. But to see he's having that sort of, impact with the offense. And just some of his, you know, it's just his per 36, his per 100 possession numbers. They're just strong. I mean,
it's a lot, right?
I'm speechless, right? But this, right? So this goes to, you know, because Brad has it really, like, he makes his mark with taking players and putting them in position to succeed, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it was, you know, you go back to Isaiah Thomas all the way back to like Jordan Crawford, right? He has a knack for that. So as part of this, you know, just, you know, Brad recognizing what Theis's skills are, you know, putting him in the right spot. Would he be as an effective player if he was on another team? Not that I want to steal any of Theis's thunder, but does Brad deserve some credit here too?
Well, I can tell you that Brad, coming into the season, said, like, the continuity, the familiarity is really important to the Celtics. Like, that's him knowing what we're trying to do is as important as players being able to kind of execute certain things. Like, part of what has made Theis so valuable is that he came into the season knowing, all right, this is the scheme. When we want to run X, this is what we're trying to do. And so that continuity with the rest of his teammates is very, very valuable.
Yeah.
So as I'm talking here, I'm kind of running through some of these lineups, and I'm just five-man lineups. And I'm resetting these kind of like these filters, like these lineups that have played like 50 minutes or more together. So there's six lineups that have played 50 minutes or more together. Tice is in all of them. The starters have an offensive rating of 121. So that's, you know, so you got Hayward, Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Tice. A 121.2, Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Shemi, and Tice. That's only been six games. That's 50 minutes. Kemba, Gordon, Marcus, Tatum, and Tice is 108.6. So there's a lot of Daniel Tice in these five man lineups. I don't know how many minutes I have to bring this down to add other people into this mix. But like the number one, so I just dropped it to like minutes, 30 minutes or more. The number one offensive rating is that lineup with Ojeleye in there. And that's just a tick, a hair above the starting lineup, which is much more that means more because it's 50 minutes versus 188 minutes.
Yeah.
That 121 offensive rating, 121 points per 100 possessions is a good number. You know, like you're scoring a fair amount of points there. And the defensive rating is 108.5. So your net rating is 12.5.
That's damn good.
You know, like that's a pretty good lineup. You're scoring a lot. You're defending pretty well. You'd want to get that. You're defending well enough. Like you'd want to obviously get that lineup, that defensive number a little further down to like, but that net rating is great. And that's the thing with Tice is he does what he's supposed to do well. And this is the very Belichickian do your job. Like he does his job very well, right? Like that's
hell yeah.
He's not, is he an all-star? No, but for this team with this group, he's the exact type of guy. He doesn't need any touches. He'll score on overflow stuff. He'll score when it's like everybody's dropping in on or overreacting to a drive and he pops out. Yeah, you get an open shot. He's shooting very well. He's the Celtics' best shooter from 8 to 16 feet. He's shooting like 54% from that range. So that little short roll elbow jumper is money. That's enough. All you have to do is be a threat. And Daniel Tice is enough of a threat on offense. He gets in and out of picks very, very quickly. He doesn't linger. He doesn't like stand there too long. He on offense, he's exactly what the Celtics need, which is shocking to me at this point because
he's doing all of this while getting the worst whistle in the entire league.
Right. Right. Right.
I mean, he gets absolutely no respect. And it's still astonishing to me that the officials collectively haven't caught on to what a good defender he is. And that is going to turn next season. He'll start to get the benefit of the doubt. That's just life in the NBA. So, I was just looking that he's guaranteed, you know, the Celtics have him next year, $5 million. That contract becomes guaranteed, you know, in July. So the Celtics are obviously, I mean, unless they make some sort of crazy move, that seems like a no-brainer of a move, right? Bringing him back at $5 million. I mean, that's a steal,
yeah.
You know? So you get him back. He's still, I don't know, he's 28. He's pretty healthy. And he's going to be another year of continuity and he's going to get a better whistle.
Well, you think right? So. You would hope so. You
he
would
is. Hope so. Come
on. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes I think he does have a tendency to like foul and like drop his hands a little bit. I don't want to take away from the war on Tice, like, but yeah, it would be great if he could like not foul as much, whatever it is. All right, take a break. We'll come back. We'll finish the discussion on Daniel Tice. See maybe what he can do better as the season maybe resumes or next year. We'll talk about that next on the Locked On Celtics. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So Daniel Theis has been absolutely perfect in every way, as if you've as the last 15 minutes have shown us. But I'm sure there are things that he can do better. And I think if there's any one thing that I would like him to try to do is maybe be not as shy shooting the ball. I think maybe taking a few more of the shots, just a few, might be a way for him to kind of open things up even more.
I mean, eye test, you know, not looking at his numbers and, you know, his assist ratio or anything like that. It seems to me that he rarely forces it. When he does get the ball in the paint, you know, not in a post-up situation, but, you know, in that elbow area, and he's got a foot of space, he's shooting it, and I'm confident in that shot. I think he takes open threes when they're there. I think they encourage him to take those sorts of shots. His percentage is down a bit this season, but if Theis is open at the 3-point line, one, I'm expecting him to take it, and I don't have any problems with that particular shot for the most part, depending on the point in the game. So I think it's kind of hard to say, could he get more attempts, especially when we're looking at, you know, guys like Tatum and Brown ascending. It already feels like there aren't as many shots amongst those four guys. So maybe Marcus could give up a couple buckets, a couple shots, and toss them over to Theis. But for me, it's kind of hard to see where would those come from, because I don't, you know, I think he just fits seamlessly offensively.
Yeah, no, I think it's just I would like to just see him take maybe one or two more threes. He's taking 1.4. He's shooting 32%. I think he's better than that. I think he can really get to maybe league average, a little above league average. I thought last year he was much better at shooting the threes, but he was coming off the bench. So I don't know. I think just an overall, maybe just, and we say, where are those shots going to come from? It's one shot per game, you know, like one shot. Instead of that short roll, maybe there's an opportunity to pop a little bit more. Maybe just one or two more, just to draw the defender out just a little bit more. Just give him just an extra chance to, you know, he's scoring 9 points a game. We don't need him to do more than that. But, you know, 10 points a game, 10 and a half points a game. Something just a little extra. I admit I'm nitpicking here. Nitpicking here. But, like, what can he do better? I don't want to say, oh, there's nothing he can do better, because there is stuff he can do better. I mean, we talk about the war on Theis, but some of it, like, they're not just looking for him to call fouls. I mean, some of those are just fouls. So he does have to, like, improve that a little bit. He can't put himself in a position where those fouls are going to be called. So foul a little less, shoot just a tiny bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see on the offensive end, it'd be nice to, I mean, he has a good rapport with Marcus, right? Marcus seems to find him on either making those little pocket passes or throwing lobs when Theis is cutting to the hoop. So, you know, maybe you'd say let's try to, you know, run some more of those plays. But I do agree with you on defense, right? I mean, Theis is a pretty good shot blocker, right? I mean, he's like a block and a half a game. He's not an intimidating presence, but he can go up there and get his fair share of shots. So I think it's just, you know, if he's a little bit smarter, he's a little bit quicker, and maybe it's just comes with another season where he's just a little bit more familiar with where he needs to be. And if he's a half step quicker getting somewhere, along with getting the benefit of the doubt, then, you know, he could trim a foul off of his off of his game. Because there are plenty of games where it seems like, oh, Tice has five fouls. Tice has five fouls. You know, we can't afford to lose him here. So I get what you're saying there. And, you know, maybe between the two things, he could trim that number down. Yeah. And we would be less worried about, oh, shit, is Cantor going to come in the game now? You know?
I gotta tell you, man. Cantor has been killing the Celtics since that hip injury, since that dive. What was it, OKC, whatever it was, since that dive, he was killing the Celtics. So I don't know how that's going to manifest itself next year, what's going to happen. But okay, so here's the real question. Can the Celtics be a championship level team with all of the things that we've said about Tice, how much we've loved him, how great a season that he's had? Can the Boston Celtics be a championship level team with Daniel Tice as their starting center?
Yes, I think so.
I'm not saying yes or no. It's possible, but okay.
But I don't see him as being, when you look at, I think he holds his own against some of the bigger players. He's an in-between size center. I throw out the whole Philly thing. I mean, there are very few centers who match up well with Embiid. Probably the best one is on the Philly bench, but so I can't get bogged down with Philly, but you know, rolling him out against Milwaukee if he's covering Lopez, or Toronto, or just even against the Lakers, I don't know. I don't look at him and think he's a big problem for us. Right. When I see some of the other players, of the other centers out there, I don't feel that way at this level. The way he's playing, I think it's good enough. I don't think this is what holds the Celtics back. And maybe part of that is because I don't know of another player that they could add that would improve on Tice, enough that would be worth any sort of, you know, trade or shakeup, right? We've been over that a million times.
Right. The question really is, and I think it's possible, but look at the road the Celtics would have to take, like, right now. If they started the playoffs tomorrow, the Celtics would have to get past Philadelphia. And can they get past Philadelphia with Daniel Tice as their starting center? Like, they've beaten Philadelphia. It really depends on Embiid and which Embiid we're getting.
Yeah.
But can Tice – there's nothing that says you have to match up against Joel Embiid. All you have to do is be able to limit the rest of their team enough. If Embiid goes off, Embiid goes off. Like, I'm a big proponent of, if he goes off for 40 or 50, just hold the rest of the team to 40 or 50 and you're good. Can he be enough – to do that? Can they trust the Celtics enough? Can they trust him enough on the Celtics to have him do that? Can they trust him enough to not foul and have to play Cantor or Robert Williams, who's, you know, still not ready yet? Now, Tice is playing almost 24 minutes a game. Wouldn't it be great if he could play 30 minutes a game? You're like, that's...
Well, he might have to in the playoffs, yeah.
Right. So can he do that? Can he be that guy that does enough offensively? Can he be the guy that does enough to pull Embiid away from the basket? Because, okay, the Celtics, you say, all right, we're going to concede the Embiid matchup, but one of the biggest problems is that he's going to be defending the rim. And can Tice do enough? Can Tice is Tice willing to take – two or three three-pointers in that situation and have Brett Brown call a timeout and be like, all right, we can't leave this guy open now. Like, that's, can he do that? And then beyond that, if you say yes, then let's presume that they make it all the way to Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's got a ton of size. And they've got the Lopez brothers and Giannis. And then if they do get past Milwaukee, let's say they have to play the Lakers, who've got size, a ton of size. Like that, and the Celtics have both beaten and lost to the Lakers. But my point is, there's a road to a championship that presents the Celtics with tough matchups at presumably their weakest point in the starting lineup.
Yes, yes. And I think it's the widest gulf is against Philadelphia. Yes. So the Bucks can roll out both Lopez brothers, which would be tough for him. I think the whole key to this is it's that there's nobody after Tice. So if he's going to play extended minutes, he has to play smart, and he can't get in foul trouble because the drop off from him to the next guy is so substantial. So, now that I think about your question in that regard, I see it as a concern, but when Tice is on the floor, I like what he brings against most of those teams. I'm not overly concerned with him matching up against the Lopez brothers against Milwaukee. I think he's not a lumbering guy. He's not quick, but I think you need a little bit of both. You need to be strong and you need to have some quickness to do your best against Anthony Davis. It's a tough matchup for anybody. So again, I still think he's good enough. I still think he's good enough, and maybe I'm being overly optimistic.
There's enough evidence to show that it's possible, and the Celtics have won a lot of big games against some of these teams with him there. So I don't bring it up to say it's impossible, but and maybe saying with Tice as your starting center, maybe that's not the best way to put it, because like you said, the fact that he's starting isn't necessarily the issue. The fact that there's nobody really behind him is more of the issue, that you can't count on Cantor necessarily. Maybe he can do well. He might. There is certainly enough evidence this season to say Cantor in certain situations can do good enough.
Yeah.
Robert Williams, eventually, you'd like to think, will figure some things out enough where he's not blasé, but you know, at some point he also is who he is. And like, I don't want to say this the wrong way, but I don't want to go all James Young on him and be like, if only he can do blah, blah, blah. Like, he's a better player, and I think he's more committed to his craft. But I only bring that up to say, like, James Young was who he was. And at some point, like, the hopes and the whatever work, like, you can't overcome, like, you are who you are. And Williams is just so young and he's still inexperienced. He hasn't played enough to break through some of that stuff. And I think he really wants to break through some of that stuff. So that's why I hesitated. But he just still also has that personality where, like, you know, sometimes he has those lapses. He's like, oh shit. You know, like, oh man, sorry.
Yeah. I see that. I absolutely see that. You're right. And you mix that in with, you know, we're starting to be concerned about his ability to stay healthy. So you add that into the mix, but you're right. I mean, I think we're a few years away, you know, probably two seasons away before we can stamp him as a particular type of player. And you're right. I mean, I think we've completely dismissed Cantor because he's had such a bad stretch here. But you know, if he's able to get healthy, I mean, he's a pretty fit guy. And then they do come back for a playoff push. Maybe he is healthier. And then we can see him have an impact. And he's had dominant second quarters. And I think he's had good games against the Lakers. So he can be a factor in certain matchups. It's just, I think, you know, I'd always hope for a little more from Rob this year. We just thought he could take a little bit of a step forward, and he really hasn't, right? He's just been a kind of a neutral presence because of the injury. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate. Not saying that he's not advancing his game a little bit, but I don't think it's anything that will be noticeable in the playoffs. So for me, I think as the Celtics are marching through the playoffs and where do they come up short, I still feel like it's going to be, it's not going to be the center position. I just feel like it'll be some other area. I don't know. Maybe I'm just blind. I don't know. I'm just embracing Tice for what he is. It's almost like, you're just screaming because you want to scream. There was no real, alternative for the Celtics. And I think some refuse to accept that. And they'll still want to say, well, that's because Ainge didn't make a trade. And then we have to have this whole conversation again where it's, tell me again who you wanted to
trade for.
All that bullshit. So, I guess it's just me being resigned to say, you know what? I like Tice. He's good enough. And we'll just, hopefully we get better play from some of the other guys, some of our elite wings that'll carry us. We'll ride those mismatches, and they'll offset the shortcomings we have at center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, all I know is if the playoffs do come back and they're going to say, make somebody beat us, it's going to be Daniel Tice. Like, and it's, you've got four other guys in the perimeter, so it's going to be hard to be like, well, we're going to make Daniel Tice beat us, because those other four guys can just create so much for themselves that you can say it, but you're not going to be able to do it. So that's the Celtics are just uniquely built to have four wings as good as they have. You don't need, like, that's what makes Tice so good, is that he just doesn't need that attention, and so that's why he's just kind of been perfect for the Celtics. But we'll see. Hopefully we'll get these answers to the questions. So I want to thank everybody for sticking with the show this week. We'll continue some deep dives next week. We'll have to talk about Marcus Smart and other guys on the bench. We'll talk about Brad Stevens as well. So subscribe to the show and you'll get these podcasts directly to your device when they publish. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to go to masslive.com because there's companion written piece to all of these podcasts as well when we're doing the deep dives. So thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody for rating. Thanks everybody for giving those good written reviews. We continue to climb in the Apple Podcast rankings. So go ahead and give that 5-star rating, good written review there. That's the show. Now go ahead and tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On NBA. All right.
Okay. It got to be a little tough to kind of like nitpick Tice's. I was like, I wasn't prepared to fucking dig into Tice's defensive footwork or his shortcomings. So it felt like that was a little bit there, a little bit of a tough spot there. But hey,
that's.
What are you going to do?
I think it's appropriate. I really do think that was appropriate because what do you expect from fucking Daniel Tice?
Right.
Like, that's why I was definitely nitpicking.
Like, yeah, you said it. Yeah. I mean, we had to, if we're forced to look for something.
Right.
That's what it is. So,
like, you can sit there and have like, oh yeah, I got 10 things that Jaylen Brown can do better because Jaylen Brown's so fucking good. He's got so much potential. Like, there's so much more that he can do better because he's 23 and he's got a world of potential ahead of him. Like, Daniel Tice, this is kind of like Daniel Tice. This is kind of who he is.
Right. You're nitpicking Tice. You're like, Jesus Christ, he's like, fucking Daniel Tice.
Right. Like, what am I? What more you fucking want? Like, really, honestly, like, what? Like, we could just, the entire segment could have just been you and be like, what more do you fucking want, John? And I've been like, you know what?
Figures, true. We saved our best lines for off.
I'll still put this on at the end. I'll do it after the sign-off.
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, shit. All right, man. Take it easy. Stay safe.
Yeah, man. I'll talk to you later.